You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 26th of July. Ron Boone rejoins the program, discusses the Jazz and the NBA as a whole. But first, do we want Donovan playing for USA? And how good could the Jazz be offensively? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making your offseason better as a Jazz fan. And you can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Stitcher, Spotify, and tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. It's your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. How are you? So glad to be with you. Thanks very much for tuning into the program. Ron Boone rejoins us today, so that will be absolutely fabulous. We appreciate that. Trevor Booker is joining me Monday for Locked On NBA, and he's got some interesting thoughts on the Jazz, so we'll have that for you on Monday's edition of Locked On Jazz. And Andy Larson is scheduled to join me for the Locked On Jazz summer interview series coming your direction next week. So we'll have Andy Larson on the program. Sound good? All right. The number one question that I am getting right now from just about everybody around is, should Donovan Mitchell play in for USA or should he withdraw? Is it good or bad for the Jazz? And I think it's good. Some of it depends on the group he's with and whether they take it seriously, and the travel is the negative. But talking to trainers over the years, the number one thing that is regularly said by trainers is that guys don't get enough literally time running, not just basketball run, but running before the season starts. That's actually what they're about to go do. They're about to go do a great deal of running. And so much of everything now is non-contact and this and that. And so for Rudy Gobert and Bojan Bogdanovic and Donovan Mitchell, they'll actually get real basketball run playing in the World Cup this summer, and generally it's good for them. The idea of injury, sure, you can take the one case example where Dante tears his ACL after coming out of summer league with the Jazz, and that's your injury case, but the fact is they're playing less organized in probably higher risk situations everywhere else they are. So the number one conversation being asked is whether or not Donovan should be playing in for Team USA, and it looks like he'll make that team. And the overall collection I'm getting from comment, I think the answer to that is, yeah, it's good for Donovan. It's one, it's a world-class experience. Two, he's a kid, let him enjoy it. But from a purely Jazz basketball aspect of things, it is probably good for him in the sense it gets him run. The Jazz side of things that's interesting is Bogdanovic, Ingles, Gobert, Mitchell are all playing World Cup. So their preseason run that takes place after Labor Day is not going to have the marquee players. And it means that camp is going to be a time in which these guys have to get to know each other and understand their games. And camp's really short. In fact, the other thing I've heard from most trainers and people that you talk to around the NBA is that camp is too short now. That this has been ongoing for the last, as they shortened up in collective bargaining agreement for the last decade, that camp is too short. And so if camp is too short, then the World Cup stretches it out. But camp being too short for the Jazz means that these guys do not get an opportunity or a chance to build a relationship, learn each other, and get to know each other in the same sense that maybe they would in an old school, longer training camp, and we're rebuilding an entire roster. So in that sense, this camp, I think that would be the only negative, but they're all having a shared experience there for those guys. All right. Second thing I wanted to touch on before we went to Ron Boone today is how good could the Jazz be offensively? And I'm working on a project in this, and I just wanted to let you in a little bit of the process. So last year, the Jazz quantified shot quality. The number one question confronting the Utah Jazz is whether or not they got open looks over the last few years because they had great offense that got them looks, or because their shooters were so bad that everyone left them open. So when you try to figure this out, somewhat the first thing you have to do is kind of look and see, well, okay, so Ricky Rubio's quantified shot quality last year was a 52.1. In other words, that's what an average shooter would do with his shots. Mike Conley in Memphis, where he was the number one focus and not in as good a system, was 49.4. Some of that's them leaving Rubio open. Jay Crowder's shot number was a 55.5. His quantified shot quality was a 55.5. Jeff Green's in Washington was a 52.8. Okay, either Jeff Green's not taking quite as many threes as Crowder, because Crowder took a ton, or people are leaving Jeff Green way more open than they would otherwise. Now, the tricky one for the Jazz is trying to figure this out is, you know, Kyle Korver's quantified shot quality was only a 49.0. That's because no one was leaving him open, right? Joe Ingles' quantified shot quality was a 53.2. That's really high. Bojan Bogdanovic was 51.4. So either Joe's only taking shots when he's open, possible, or this system leads to more open looks. I just don't know the answer on that. I'm working on ways to try to figure it out. But here's what's exciting from a Jazz standpoint. If the Jazz can get similar looks, their quantified shot quality last year was a 54.7. They shot 1.2 points below average. So if an average player, according to quantified shot quality, had taken every shot of the Jazz would have shot 54.7. But since the Jazz shooters were below average, they're minus 1.2 overall. The Jazz then ended up shooting an effective field goal percentage, was fifth best in the NBA. They led the league in dunks and special shot. Had they shot average, they would have been the number two shooting team in the NBA with only Golden State in front of them. And Golden State's not going to be that good next year. Golden State was by far the best shooting team in the league at 4.1 points above quantified shot quality. The second was San Antonio at 3.6. They just took really bad shots, like crazily bad shots. And then was Toronto at 1.3. Then the bell curve was exactly what you'd expect. The bell curve went between 1.3 and negative 2.2, and Atlanta and New York were just by far the worst shooting teams in the league, along with Detroit. And then everyone else is kind of in this bell curve from positive 1.3 to negative 1.4. The Jazz being on the way end of that bell of bad shooting. Not like obscenely bad shooting or good shooting, which is about five teams, which is the way bell curves work, right? Like there's just the fringes. And the Jazz were on the way end of the bell. If the Jazz got to the middle of the bell and get the exact same shots as they got a year ago, they'll be the number one effective field goal percentage shooting team in the league, in theory, because the Warriors will drop. And if they're at all above average, then they become way better than anyone else in the league. And that gets super interesting. Is it the system or is it the shots? Well, in the 2018-19, the Jazz had the best shot quality. In the 2017-18 season, the Jazz had the number two shot quality behind only Houston. In the 2016-17 season, the Jazz quantified shot quality was 10th. So that leads me to believe that the Jazz have made some adjustments in their system to become a better shooting team over the last few years. We'll dig into it a little bit more. The Jazz certainly had great shot distribution last year. That was a huge part of why they won. And if they lose that, then all the added shooting doesn't matter. If they don't maintain this great shot distribution, then all the added stuff they have does not matter at all. All right, that is a quick thought or two for you on where the Jazz sit and some shot stuff. And now Ron Boone will join us for the summer interview series coming up. If you want to send Ron a thank you at 1041 straight on Twitter, I would greatly appreciate it because we love Ron and would thank you very much for doing that. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. I am running out on the days in which I'm going to have my Santa Fe. I'm kind of bummed. It's been a great car. It's got all sorts of bells and whistles and super features. A good friend of ours just buying a Hyundai Santa Fe, and they asked me. I said, it's great. Like, it's just great. My son's driving his all over the place. It's been absolutely terrific for us, the Hyundai brand. So if you're shopping for a car and Hyundai's not on your list, take a moment, stop by Murdoch in Linden, in Logan, or in Salt Lake, and at least see what you can get for the value. It might be a brand you don't know particularly well. See what they can do for you. See what bells and whistles you get for the price. Take a drive and at least compare shop it to someone else. I'm not going to tell you how you spend your money. Everyone's got their own visual likes of what they like or dislike, but the Kona will give you a lot for that small SUV. The Tucson is absolutely fabulous, and the Santa Fe is just nails. We are so pleased with the one we bought for as the third car in the family, which only my son drives, and we are so pleased with the one that I'm driving right now, having a great time with it. Super space as well. We went to San Diego and then to Hawaii and had massive amounts of luggage and were able to get it in that Santa Fe impressively, whereas we had to take an Uber and a rental car when we got to both San Diego and Hawaii. It's Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Parts 5 and 6 with the great Ron Boone. So, Ron, this is what has me, as we continue day 3 with Ron Boone, the most excited about the way Justin Zanuck and Dennis Lindsay have built this basketball team. I can pen in, not pencil in, pen in what I think I'm getting from Mike Conley, what I'm getting from Joe Ingles, what I'm going to get from Ed Davis, what I'm going to get from Jeff Green, what I'm going to get from Bojan Bogdanovic, what I'm going to get from almost every, the Dante and Moutier, I don't really know. Royce O'Neal, I feel very comfortable. I know exactly what I'm getting out of him. And so what we are relying on for the Jazz to be great in this season, in my opinion, are two guys who have to be great for us. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And I think that's the perfect roster composition when your best players are the guys that you need to have great years.
Okay. I totally agree with you there, because that, they're the face of this franchise, and you bring Mike Conley in there as well. But teams are built in the NBA nowadays with three great players, and I know we'll get into other teams in the NBA here. You know, I don't know, is this segment or next time, but the fact that Donovan is going to be playing now with a great point guard. Rudy's going to be getting a chance to play with a great point guard there as well. So those players will – now, how much and where are you looking for them to elevate their game? Scoring, defense, just an overall better player because of the presence of a Conley and the moves that the Jazz made? You know, that's what I think is going to make them greater or better than what they were last year. Maybe Donovan doesn't average 22 points a game. Maybe he averages 19. But he's better teammate and better at other things that has made Joe Ingles better or maybe Dante better or something like that. I think that's what where it, if the growth of this team, if that's where it's going to show. If you understand what I mean.
So, yeah, what I think, here's what I think on Rudy. Rudy has to prove that he is the reason we're great defensively, right? That it wasn't Gobert and Favors, that it's just Gobert. That he's that great, and with us, without Derek, we're still elite defensive, and he's got to be unbelievable defensively. I mean, if he wins Defensive Player of the Year for the third straight year, or is even in the running for it, we're going to be so damn good, it's crazy. Because that means we're a top five defensive team again.
And that means a lot of – that means wins. That means a ton of wins because the strength of this team last year was the defense. The strength of this team last year was the fact that they offensively, the ball movement, the uncontested shots that they got, and when they didn't make them, it showed that, you know, where the Jazz were vulnerable. But the defensive side of the ball, didn't waver at all, I think, for the most part, you know, last year. So I totally agree with you as far as Rudy is concerned. But I think a couple of days ago when you and I were discussing this, we talked about what kind of help is Rudy going to get or what kind of help does he need to keep the Jazz in the top five defensively. That's something that's going to have to be seen. You're going to have to use a lot of defensive schemes, David. That's a question. Or just defense as usual, like we've done it the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm dropping Rudy to the rim and switching one through four defensively and making everybody get to Rudy. That would be, you know, and then Karl Anthony Towns will cause us problems. Mm-hmm. And Marc Gasol is in the East now, will cause us problems. But otherwise, there's not a lot of shooting fives, and we've seen that Jokic doesn't cause Rudy a lot of problems. For Donovan, to me, I think that's the big question. And really, he's got to find a way to become more efficient offensively. You know, he's 2 years in the league. He's an inefficient offensive player, as big a scorer he is. And the question is a little bit, is that because of who he's been playing with and the lack of help, or is that just who he is? And I think that's the next, that's the improvement he has to make. What does that mean to you as a player? What is it in year three that Donovan Mitchell does that makes him a better basketball player?
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to get to a couple of questions ago about Donovan and how he becomes a better player. And maybe he doesn't score a lot of points, but what does he do to make himself a better player and helping his teammates be better there as well? I mean, there's other parts of his game. He probably maybe rebounding a little bit, have a better year rebounding, or he has more assists, more steals or something like that. Something has to show up, I think, during the course of the year other than his shooting. Maybe his shooting percentage goes down, but other parts of his game goes up. I mean, those are the things that I think he's going to have to figure out on how to be just as effective as he's been with better players now, more so than what he had last season. Perfect example. We made reference a couple of days ago, David, that, you know, how I thought Donovan became a much better player once he got a chance to run to be a point guard. Because now you get to the point where you understand, or you should understand, on how to make your teammates better, how to get them involved, and that kind of thing. I think he learned, but he also played at that position quite a few games, and it was like the pick and roll was definitely for him a lot of the times when instead of making other players or getting other players open. So this is going to be, a learning year. I mean, Donovan's been in the league, going to be in the league for 2 years, but he's still going to be learning. And fortunately, we have, you know, a veteran player, a senior veteran player in Conley that's going to help him along.
How much in your mind is Donovan's inefficiency based on being on the floor with non-shooters so much of the time?
That's huge. That's huge because you just think about it, David. If Rudy or Donovan or someone has the defense geared to stop them. Perfect example is how, you know, the Jazz put together a game plan to stop James Harden. But did they totally stop him, or did they cause him to take away something from his teammates because of the way they were playing Donovan? I mean, the way they were playing James Harden. That's the type of thing that Donovan has to figure out. And I get the, you know, you get the, I know we're discussing this, but I think Donovan's going to be just fine this year. And he might get off to a little slow start because he'll be in a learning session, but I think he'll be just fine.
He's Ron Boone. He's part of our summer interview series. The summer interview series continues coming up. We'll have Andy Larson, hopefully Thurl Bailey, Tony Jones, Craig Bolajack, Eric Woodard, all sorts of other guests coming up as the weeks continue as we take you all the way to training camp here on Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Before Ron and I turn the focus over to the NBA as a whole, let me tell you about Intercap Lending. Intercap's a great story because they just keep growing and getting better, and Brock and his crew and Steve Carter just keep blowing me away. And I love to try to take credit for it, but they're actually doing such amazing things that I feel like it's almost the joke. They're doing such amazing things that actually now that I joke about it and someone might think I'm serious. So here's the latest on Intercap Lending. When I first brought Intercap Lending to you, Josh Romney had bought the company, brought it back to Utah, 40-year mortgage company. They were going to make their name in the marketplace by being hyper responsive by doing things differently with their app and making it better, and by being a direct lender so that they had more flexibility and not selling off your loans. Well, they still own my loan that I did with them now probably 19 months ago or more. And what's happened? They now have 15 branches from St. George to Logan to Tooele to Vernal. They actually have a few branches in Boise, Vegas, and Phoenix now, with an out-of-state opening in the next few weeks. As of June 30th, InterCap had exceeded its production for the entire 2018 year. So they've done more loans in the first 6 months than they've done all year. Why do they do more loans? Because they get loans done. Why would a real estate agent suggest you go to InterCap? Because the only way an agent gets paid is because the deal gets done. And so they're going to go to the lender that they know can get deals done. And on the refi end of things, Steve Carter was just amazing with me. I think I've told the stories before, but you know, basically Steve Carter read the landscape perfectly, knew I was a mess, totally not organized well enough to get these things done. The app was my savior because I could just take pictures of everything. And when he realized that I wasn't going to hit a deadline, he actually drove to the practice facility, got there for me, and got the deal, got all this paperwork done. You can call Steve. He's our personal guy at InterCap. So tell me you're Locked On Jazz. He'll give you the corporate discount, and he'll take care of you. 385-800-8528. 385-800-8528. InterCap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. Ron, let's finally talk about the NBA as a whole. What is your take as somebody who's been in this league for 50 some odd years about player movement, player power, all the things that are going on?
You know, the heck with player movement. Let's talk about player power. Player power. What a change. I mean, what a difference in the way the game is used right now. The fact that players, okay, David, look at the West right now is, I think it's questionable how strong is the West. Who built these teams? Players built the West right now. There's parity in the West. Well, this might be a lot more parity in the East there as well, but there's parity in the West because of the way players move themselves around and put themselves on different teams to make this going to be a fun year. I was looking at, you know, once the Jazz got Conley, I mean, it was so much excitement that a lot of the critics, the talk shows moved the Jazz all the way up to number three. And then other teams started to make moves. And the Jazz in the West dropped to number six, from what I understand. But ninth, I think, in some polls, the Jazz, as far as the league is concerned. Now, is that good? Absolutely. But it just shows what the players have done by wanting to play with certain guys and being in a position to do it, that the parity now is unbelievable.
Who is your favorite? Who's your favorite in the Western Conference?
Man, boy, David, you know, I got Denver, L.A., you got Houston, the Lakers, you got the Jazz. Portland, you know, they get Whiteside, that made them a lot stronger. So I think it's my favorite. If I would have to say the Clippers would probably be at the top right now. Denver, who didn't make hardly any moves, come back with the same team for the most part. The strength of that team, I think we saw it last year. Now, will they be better because of, you know, what they accomplished last year? That's something to we'll have to keep an eye on. But I really think that probably the Clippers. Don't overlook Houston. Questionable whether those two guys, Westbrook and Harden, can play together. Two guys that like the basketball, but the comments that they've made is that when you have talent like they have, it works itself out. That will remain to be seen whether that can happen or not.
The crazy one for me is I had the Rockets as basically in some ways the favorite, and then I had the Clippers and then the Rockets. And I kind of get that Russell Westbrook is better than Chris Paul at this point in their careers, but Russell's so inefficient. Somehow I don't know, I'm coming around on it, but I actually feel like the Rockets might have not be at full strength might not be as good. But on the other end, Chris Paul's going to play 55 games and Russell's going to play 78 to 82 in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. So maybe the Rock, I mean, the numbers on 538's website have the Rockets as the favorite by a large margin, by 8 games over everybody else in the West, which seems crazy, but maybe Russell and Harden figure this thing out, and then they're just unbelievable. And frankly, maybe Russell playing with shooting the same way we talk about Donovan. I mean, Russell hasn't had a lot of shooting around him, and now he's going to play a high pick and roll with Clint Capella with shooters all around him. Maybe he's going to be unstoppable.
Well, that will be seen, have to be seen here at the beginning of the year on who makes the adjustment between the two. Obviously, they're the most ball-dominant players, two of the most ball-dominant players in the NBA. That's how they, you know, help the teams win. But according to James Harden and some of the comments that I've made, he said they're very talented, and when you're as talented as they are, you know, it's going to work itself out. I agree with you. I think that team could be off the charts as far as the strength of this team, as far as winning basketball games. Only thing that bothers me is that sometimes Westbrook gives it important the fact that he's playing by himself. Just the way he pushes the ball up the floor and tries to make things happen all by himself. Whereas James Harden plays at a different pace. And will Westbrook wait on him? You know, will they go to the point where they're playing a half court game now? And by playing a half court game, what does that do to Westbrook's game?
Right.
So I just wonder what's going to happen there. The strength of that team is probably better than any team in the NBA. But we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Here's a crazy one: Rockets, Lakers, Warriors, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, Blazers, Spurs. Four of those teams are losing in the first round or not making the playoffs.
Boy, that's unreal. But exciting, don't you think? I mean, this is, boy, you just look at the strength of those basketball teams and just think about one of those teams is not going to make the playoffs.
Right.
Or two of those teams are not going to make the playoff.
Well, and if the Pelicans are good, if the Mavericks are good, if Chris Paul plays and the Thunder turn out to be half decent, which I don't think, but Danilo Gallinari's not bad. Karl Anthony Towns is on the Timberwolves. Like, if some of these other teams are, if one or two of those other teams gets good, then I don't know where everybody fits.
So we don't need to talk about injuries and what an injury would do to a team.
Oh my gosh, does everything?
Because we're talking about healthy teams right now. But what does an injury do to? To a team.
Do you think the Warriors... So I think Steph's going to win the MVP because I think he's the best player in the game and now there's no one taking his possessions. But if the Warriors are hovering in the middle of the pack, give me that mindset of a professional athlete, and they're searching at 45, 46, 47 wins, can the eight, with as tired as they are and as high level, do they tap out on a season in February, in January, when it's just a grind and they don't look like they're a title contender, or are they such professionals and such incredible competitors that they'll still drive through it and be a legitimate playoff team?
You hope that that's the type of player, the team that they are. You want to play the best that you can out there on the floor as far as players are concerned. But I don't have them pick anywhere as far as being a contender in the West. So Curry will be Curry, but I just don't see them being an effective basketball team this year, especially early in the year. I mean, without Klay Thompson. And so you're asking me, do they just tap out and just wait for the following year?
Right.
They go into a new arena. I hope not, David. You know, I hope that you give him.
I mean, they're tired, right? They've played five straight finals. I think it's hard. The team we have not talked to, I mean, we're talking about this. The Lakers could be great, right? I mean, they still have LeBron and Anthony Davis. I think they're the best offense in the league unless DeMarcus screws them up. Kuzma's got to get more efficient. But, I mean, that team is really loaded.
I like what they've done. I know they waited to the wee hours in order to, because they were trying to wait on certain players. But did they surround themselves with enough? I mean, what player on that team besides Davis and LeBron has to be that third monster that's going to be effective and give them X amount of minutes and that you can rely on? Kuzma? That would be the only player on that team that I think that, you know, could help them. I like them, but I don't see them being as great as what we think they are going to be.
The other question, I mean, LeBron is going to get old at some point. Like, it has to happen. I don't know when, but it has to happen.
His minutes, do they cut his minutes back? I mean, what did he have? It's about 38 minutes last year, somewhere in there. That's a lot of minutes for a guy that already has a lot of minutes, you know, on those legs. He does take care of his body very, very well. But just think about this, David. I mean, he's been in the league a long time, and he's got a son now that's tearing up. he's been around a long time. He's played a lot of games. But I totally agree. I mean, when does he start to break down? And you start to break down, you get these little nagging injuries that you want to try to make sure you're healthy at a certain time of the season, especially going into maybe the All-Star break or at the end of the season or something like that. It's going to be important, I think. And you just brought up something as far as LeBron breaking down. I mean, does he break down? If he starts to break down, then you know what happens to the Lakers right now.
Right. And some of the numbers are showing signs. We'll see what happens. Ron Boone, it's been a pleasure to chat with you this week. Super appreciate it. Look forward to playing a little golf with you, and we'll talk more about it as time goes on.
Let's do it, David.
Summer interview series continues with Andy Larson next week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for the iTunes reviews as well. And since the great Ron Boone at 10:41 straight, a thank you. Have a great weekend. Enjoy yourself. Thanks for tuning in.